It's Wrestling Observer Live, and we're live many times, many days of the week, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, Sundays, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific, and Saturdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. It's Jim Valley.
Oh, that's the most exciting type of valley.
The effing king of recovery, 6-0 against death.
I don't want to toot my own horn, but toot, toot.
Back because of the fans.
Each and every one of you.
The largest collection of STD-having trailer park trash The Rock has ever seen.
You all fat, neck, beard, and mouth-breathing trolls.
Oops. Go ahead, Cena.
All you do is be hurtful. All you are is abusive. And all you've ever done is bully me into being your damn puppet and expected me to do it with a smile on my face.
It's fine. Kevin Owens, not on the show. Unless, of course, you were to believe WWE. Unreal. And I don't. Anyway, it's Jim Valley. I am not here today. I am out enjoying some time on the lake in August. Damn it. Swear to God, my birthday was like a week ago, and now we're here in August. July goes by like that. And then September to January lasts about 2 years. February, about 6 months. And then March, about 2 months. It's just freaking ridiculous. Anyway, hope you enjoy night one of SummerSlam. Yes, half the card at twice the price. As we get Randy Orton and Jelly Roll against Drew McIntyre, who's back in the States against Logan Paul. And for the World Heavyweight Championship, Gunther versus CM Punk. But that's not the only thing I want to talk about. Also this week, we saw El Grande en Americano get a hell of a reaction in Mexico from the Mexican fans. Same with Dirty Dom. Why is that? Why weren't the Mexican AAA fans offended by El Grande Americano? Well, I think I have the perfect person to explain it. He's been called the most hated man in Mexico. Sam Adonis is going to join us in a bit, talk about the difference the way American fans see wrestling and the way Mexican fans see lucha. Stand by, Jim Valley, Wrestling Observer Live. It's Jim Valley, it's Wrestling Observer Live. Though I am not live, I hope you are enjoying your SummerSlam Saturday. I guess I'm enjoying Collision Thursday. I'm at a lake enjoying the nice weather, so you'll have to forgive me. But a couple of things I didn't want to talk about coming up a little bit later in the show. You probably saw the video from AAA in Mexico of the Mexican crowds cheering and going crazy for Dirty Dom and El Grande Americano. You may have been confused, as they were obviously supposed to be the heels, beating up Dragon Lee and beating up Vikingo. But the crowd went insane for these guys. Now, Dominic, maybe you can understand. He's a big WWE star, Intercontinental Champion. And there he is in a AAA ring. Anytime you see a star or a title change with fans, it's a big deal, regardless of if it's a heel or a babyface. But El Grande Americano, Chad Gable is an incredible talent. You know, if he was a few inches taller, he'd be this generation's Kurt Angle. And he is just killing it as El Grande Americano. And who would have guessed that Ludwig Kaiser would be more than just someone keeping the mask warm? That he has elevated this character because of his conversational Spanish. He's able to speak it perfectly. And he is using modern current slang. I mean, this guy knows what's up. And the crowd appreciates that. So I wanted to bring in an expert, a guy who knows all about this, Sam Adonis. He has been wrestling in Mexico for I guess close to 10 years. And he knows he wrestled for AAA, wrestled for CMLL, The Crash, and so many others. He's wrestled virtually every big name in Mexico. And so he's going to come on, kind of explain the cultural differences as to why these Mexican fans don't hate El Grande Americano. So we'll do that coming up a little bit later. And Sam has got a lot of great insight. And if you don't know a lot about Lucha Libre or Mexico, trust me, it's fascinating. I knew all about it, and I still found it fascinating. Stand by. I promise you, a lot of good stuff there. But it is SummerSlam, Saturday, night one. Half the wrestling for double the price. Who wouldn't want that? It's at MetLife Stadium, New Jersey. And I guess they had to pause putting up the set yesterday because of bad weather. But it's supposed to be nice for today. So hopefully that'll work out. Also, Drew McIntyre's back from the UK. A lot of people think maybe someone pulled some strings. And how do I put this? That wouldn't be anywhere near close to the first time that's happened in wrestling. Didn't say just WWE. Said in wrestling. So maybe some people think it's a big deal, but it's happened before. It'll probably happen again. Anyway, let's talk about SummerSlam. On the surface, tonight's show looks very babyface heavy. And that just can't be. I mean, I'd be very, very surprised if it was all babyfaces going over. That's just not something WWE does. World Heavyweight Championship, CM Punk against Gunther. A lot of people think CM Punk wins and Seth Rollins comes back from his knee injury. Those were air quotes. To win Money in the Bank, which makes a lot of sense, given their history. But okay, so babyface wins, even though heel, in theory, could end up with the title. WWE Women's Championship. Tiffany Stratton defends against Jade Cargill. I guess it's the... No, it is the Women's Championship. Yeah, because it's on SmackDown. Never mind. Tiffany's very good, but I don't know if she can carry Jade. And look, I get Jade looks like $1 trillion. I mean, oh my goodness. She's very pretty. Her arms look like gym ropes. But, you know, she's obviously very limited in the ring. She's been at it for a while and really hasn't improved from what I can see. So they're going to have to put her in and protect her if she wins the title. But it's like, who's the babyface and who's the heel in this? It's very strange, this dynamic. It's like both of them are sort of heels, are sort of babyfaces, but both of them act like heels. So some people think maybe Jade might turn full-fledged heel. We shall see. In probably the most publicized match, Randy Orton, Jelly Roll, take on Drew McIntyre's back, and Logan Paul. To me, the biggest question is, what can Jelly Roll do? And what can Drew and Logan do to make Jelly Roll look like a monster at times? That's going to be the big question. Or does Randy do yeoman's work and then just tag in Jelly Roll for some spots? We shall see. But one would think the story is Logan versus Jelly Roll. And one of them has to get pinned. I guess the obvious is Jelly Roll winning for the big pop and the social media. And TMZ and all that stuff. But for the Heat, could have Logan Paul win and say, I ran that poser out of WWE. So, we shall see. Women's Tag Team Championship. Judgment Day, Raquel and Roxanne versus Alexa and Charlotte. A lot of people think Alexa and Charlotte win. Again, another babyface win. I mean, I guess you could do the split, but they're pretty over right now, and it's organic, so why not keep going? By the way, I hope that Unreal show showed a side of Charlotte that's, well, the show may be called Unreal. That's pretty real of Charlotte. It drives me crazy because, oh, Charlotte doesn't put anyone over. It's like, do you not remember the match 2 years ago? WrestleMania. Charlotte launched Rhea Ripley into the stratosphere. Charlotte made Rhea. So, shut up. Then you got Roman Reigns, Jey Uso versus Braun Breaker and Bronson Reed. Again, Bronson Reed, Braun Breaker. If Seth is winning, I think Braun and Bronson need to win. I think they need to win anyway. They're the new guys. They need to be made. And they need to, you know, pinning Jey Uso is right now not that big a deal. Sami Zayn, Karrion Kross. A lot of people speculate Sami may be turning heel. Maybe. And in that case, Karrion Kross needs to win. Or maybe Sami cheats to win. We shall see. And of course, just touching on Sunday real quick. John Cena, Cody Rhodes. I don't know. I mean, you've got Little Massachusetts coming up. And that is kind of John Cena's territory. So maybe we do the Cena turn in Lowell. And he's the babyface then. So I don't anticipate a babyface turn for John Cena at SummerSlam, especially when Lowell, Massachusetts is coming up. That is where definitely people are going to cheer him. So, you know, make it happen that way. Some people saying maybe a double turn. We shall see. Well, I thought it was fascinating how Dom and El Grande Americano were cheered in Mexico. Coming up, we'll get the perspective of a very experienced guy in Mexico, Sam Adonis. You're going to want to hear this. Stand by, Jim Valley, Wrestling Observer Live. It's Jim Valley. It's Wrestling Observer Live. Joining us now, a man who's had tremendous success in Mexico, wrestled in Japan, all over the world, here to give us a very, I think, educated perspective. Sam Adonis, even Fumi Saito likes you, so definitely you're respected.
I feel like he's a hard nut to crack, you know. So
exactly.
He's one of the guys, most respected people in wrestling at any level. They've been around so many people trying to kiss their ass, trying to get something out of them, that a lot of times, you know, they're kind of numb. They don't believe in everything. They kind of just, you know, okay, whatever, whatever. But when you present somebody with actual knowledge and actual understanding, it's an eye-opener. Why does this, you know, 35-year-old white kid know more about lucha history than most of the kids here on the show? It's good to pay attention, and knowledge is power in the wrestling business.
So I kind of wanted to dive in about the difference between how American fans perceive things in wrestling and how lucha fans perceive things in wrestling. For example, there have been some fans offended by the portrayal of whomever is under the mask as El Grande Americano. Yet, that individual showed up at AAA and the fans were going crazy for him. They were cheering. They loved that he spoke fluent Spanish. I mean, he was talking in slang, which was very impressive. And then afterwards they showed clips of him outside leading the crowd in song. Are you surprised by that?
Absolutely not. I think there's many differences between the American scene and the Mexican scene. But if you want to talk about wrestling fans, I'm of the perception in my, 17 years traveling the world that, American wrestling fans no longer appreciate professional wrestling. They love the process of professional wrestling. They love the insides and out. They love the booking. The entertainment for them does not come from the finished product. It comes from the culture around it. That's why, WWE's putting out this Unreal TV show. That's why it's all podcasts and dirt sheets. And this is the lore of American wrestling fans now. Not to say there's not still casual fans, and the majority of WWE fans still do finish, enjoy the finished product. But those fans, they have other interests. Wrestling is one of their 20 interests that they have in their life. It's not their main, attention that they give to anything. I think as far as the diehard wrestling fans that live and die by wrestling, in America, they've given up on a finished product. They don't want to suspend disbelief. They want to know why, where, and how. And I think here in Mexico, the diehards look at it, and at the end of the day, they like the process. They like the, the chisme, as we call it down here, the gossip. But without a finished product, without a edible plate, none of that's worthwhile. So I think, that's the main difference. I think down here, they're willing to suspend disbelief and to give people the benefit of the doubt in the sake of controversy, as long as you deliver a good product. And I think El Grande Americano is delivering a good product, and people want to be a part of it.
But not only that, my impression is that they leave things at the arena.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. I've had positions, for years, because when I was doing anything, the Donald Trump influenced gimmick, there would be the same fans that literally have that, 1,000-yard stare in their eyes, screaming their heads off at me in the front row, getting a little too close to the point where I'm like, maybe I should back off this guy. And that guy might be the first one after the show coming up to me to ask me to get a picture with his kid, say thank you for a great event. They're much better at being able to differentiate real and fantasy. And I think that's just, what Lucha's all about. I heard an old saying that a lot of, there's fans here that go to Lucha just to scream. They have a difficult week. They have their real life stresses. And once a week, their outlet is just going nuts. And you're not going to get in trouble. You're not going to get a noise complaint. The police aren't going to get called. You can just get it all out. And then you're satisfied. And if it was the Rudo that got you to do that in a certain, screwed up way, now you're grateful for that Rudo.
I mean, it felt to me like, in the sense of Ludwig Kaiser being German, and a lot of Germans speak fluent Spanish, thanks to Argentina. But I felt like they were giving him respect because he wasn't just a gringo coming down and just, not embracing the culture. Like they were, I'm like, yeah, this is good. This guy knows how to really talk. He's not just saying, donde está la biblioteca.
Right. And I still think there's a lot of the Lucha fans, irony is such a huge part of modern wrestling lore. And I think a lot of fans love to chirp back. They don't like being told what to do. And I think a lot of times, that's, it's not just in Mexico, that's across the United States as well. Whereas, they're painting the picture that this guy's evil and, hey, boo this evil American guy. The fans are smart enough to deduct and say, no, he's speaking Spanish with us. He looks great. He's a good wrestler. He's working hard for us. We like that. We're going to do the exact opposite of what you tell us to do. And I think that was kind of evident at the last Triple Mania, whenever Vikingo was booed out of the building by the local Mexican fans, because there is still that element of, rage against the machine, F you, we won't do what you tell us, with these wrestling fans. They like to drive the ship. They like to know they're in charge.
A lot of fans in the U.S., they'll see clips from when he came down to Mexico. Jeff Jarrett throwing tortillas at the crowd. There was a time when Shocker played a Nazi character years ago. Also, when Worlds Collide, maybe the most famous Lucha show to a generation of fans, there's Art Barr American. There's Eddie Guerrero, American, Mexican-American. And they're doing the backstroke, and they're swimming, you know, basically saying, you guys tried to swim across the Rio Grande, or your relatives were trying to escape Mexico, swimming across the Rio Grande to get to the United States. You know, things that might offend today's fan, just got to roll off the back of Mexican fans once they leave.
Well, I think it's kind of a double standard we have now, and it's really infuriating as a performer, because everybody wants to be the ones to tell you they know it's a show. Everybody wants to say, yeah, I know that's, you know, but it's all storyline and all this and that. And they all want in on the secrets. But then if you do something that is, you know, morally reprehensible, they're angry. But that's the essence of entertainment. If you watch Game of Thrones, you cannot have, you know, the evil, awful villain, you know, King Joffrey has to do these reprehensible things for you to be emotionally invested enough to continue watching. And I think that's something wrestling fans are biting off their nose to spite their face, because they want to be involved. They want to be emotionally attached. But the second you try to hook them, they cry foul. So now people don't want to try to hook them. And I think, you know, down here at least, they're willing to say, yeah, I know that's the Lucha. He's not actually a terrible human being. He just plays one on TV. And I think that's why, you know, Mexican wrestling survived as long as it has and as hot as it is, because there is that deferential. Nobody's going to be mad at somebody, you know, playing a character. Jamie Lannister didn't get canceled for throwing a kid out of a balcony. You know, the actor that played him didn't get canceled because that was too hard. You know, it's entertainment. Why are you getting mad about the you know, storylines?
Wrestling really does sort of walk that line. Maybe because there's some people who use their real names. I don't know. But it really does walk that line.
And it's just not fair, because again, we need to decide one or the other. Okay, we can either let you in on a secret, but you have to play along, you know, and understand that it's not always about what you like. It's not all about work rate. It's not all about your taste. You need to see the bigger picture and understand why this, you know, it was written this way, or just, you know, take it as a fan, see it as a surface level and stop dissecting it. You know, fans, especially American fans, want to have their cake and eat it too, and want to, you know, be the experts, but then want to be in charge of somebody's fate and career when something doesn't meet their expectations.
One thing I didn't understand at WrestleMania was the deal with Charlotte and Tiffany. People were like, oh, Charlotte never loses. I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Charlotte made Rhea Ripley, was it 2 years ago at WrestleMania? What are you talking about?
I was just like,
thanks, Charlotte. Charlotte's a star and she gives people the rub. I don't know. What show are you watching? Because that's not what I'm seeing.
Well, and the sad thing is, you know, everybody claims to be as intelligent as they are, but they're stopped and they don't realize that they're still getting got. Look how many of these Twitter angles still get people, and it's discourse constantly. And then, you know, the reasonable doubt keeps people hooked, and people are generally mad if they said, oh, I didn't know that. You know, if they actually got them and said, I thought that was real. People are mad. They feel like they were double-crossed by an organization. You know, even with this new WWE Unreal show, you know, I hate to break it to you, but now WWE can hit you with a different level. They're playing 4D chess now. Now they're going to show us saying, oh, hey, here's the backstage stuff. And in that backstage show, they can show you 12 things that aren't true.
Right.
But you're going to believe it because they told you it's real. And now, you know, literally they could plant the seeds and say, okay, Paul Heyman and Triple H really hate each other. And they could make 5 documentary episodes about that. And now you've booked 4 years of wrestling TV because now you have A versus B planted seeds as real.
Right.
You know, and the thing is, if wrestling fans were as in tune and understanding as they claim to be, they'd be able to dissect this stuff and, you know, and understand that there's levels to it, and I think it's not worth getting so emotionally upset about it. Join the, you know, ride the wave, enjoy it, because it is good. And down here, when it's done well, it's magic. They still have magic moments, just like we do in the United States. But at the end of the day, a lot of the times here, it's the good guy versus bad guy, or a very, you know, easy digestible story. And you're going to say, damn, that Rudo was fun to watch.
More of a Sam Adonis Wrestling Observer Live. So anything else as far as Lucha becomes, gets a bigger platform with WWE and AEW, and people talk more about AAA and talk more about CMLL and Mexico City and Arena Mexico and all of that. What other things do you think might be shocking or unusual to American eyes?
I think the biggest thing that people are going to kind of have a hard time grasping, and I'm curious to see how WWE manages this as well, but you know, the American perception of Mexican Lucha Libre is basically 1997 WCW Lucha. And that's our platform. That's what we think it is. That's where our opinions stem from. That's where we expand on. But at the end of the day, you know, it still kind of revolves around the same moral issues as it does at home. And sometimes, you know, heavyweight wrestlers that don't wear masks, that don't do crazy shit, are sometimes the people want to see more than the Vikingos or the Rey Fénixes. And I think that's going to be, it's going to be hard for American fans to digest that there's more star, you know, wrestlers down here that aren't necessarily the stereotypical luchadors that will be a part of the system. But at the end of the day, you know, the down here, these fans still like to see blood and guts. They like to see violence. They like to see an emotion, you know, for a fight. And it doesn't always have to be our perception of Lucha Libre. What we know of Lucha Libre in the United States, in my opinion, and I think I have a pretty good perspective, is about 10% of what Lucha Libre is to the Mexican population. But we expand on it and just, you know, hammer home that it is this WCW 97 style of wrestling. And there's a lot more to learn.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. I think another thing is with WWE fans and the announcers calling, you know, Rey the greatest luchador of all time, or calling Penta the greatest luchador in the world, or what have you. And they're great. There is no question. But I think maybe part of that problem will be, well, if they're the greatest, then why do I need to watch anybody else? Anybody right. else is a step down.
Right. So, and at the end of the day, like, you know, if you go back into history, and WWE has their hands tied always trying to, you know, control their narrative. But, you know, one of the matches that people to this day, two matches I should mention, that are to this day are considered two of the biggest mainstream remembered wrestling matches in the history of Mexico are Rayo de Jalisco against Cien Caras from 89. I think it was maybe in 90, the hair match when with the guitar incident. I'm sure you've seen that.
Oh, yeah.
And then Vampiro against Pirata Morgan.
Right.
These matches, conventionally speaking, if you talk to, you know, let's say, you know, a smart wrestling fan that seems to keep up on lucha and wrestling from around the world, and their idea of good lucha is Vikingo against Phoenix, you say, hey, this is one of the best lucha matches of all time. You put that up there and they see, you know, 1993 Vampiro just, you know, can barely grab a headlock, getting his ass kicked by Pirata Morgan, who is more than capable of doing everything, but doesn't, that's not going to compute to them. And, you know, WWE has to find the happy medium to create that same emotion and energy and not put all the eggs in the, you know, fast-paced mass wrestling basket, because this market is far too big and far too complex to just say, okay, Lucha Libre is Rey Mysterio style. Because, you know, they'll alienate a lot of families.
Right. Well, and also one thing I worry about is with the tribalism, with American wrestling, you will see some fans go, oh, well, that's flippy shit. So one of the things, like we were talking about, is with the tribalism of American fans, they'll go, oh, AEW, that's that flippy stuff. And now they see Lucha Libre and they've been conditioned that that's not good. But I mean, I love Lucha, and this, my personal experience, I can only speak for myself, but when I expose women in my life, my wife, whomever, friends, oftentimes they like the Lucha and the masked wrestlers or Ray or whomever better than any other style. It seems to be very female friendly.
I think the pageantry is a huge part of it down here.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, as a personal fan, you know, I tend to like the pageantry treat here better than we do in the United States, because, you know, sometimes around 96, 97, we took a left turn towards the realism and edge with ECW and the NWO, where, you know, combat boots and jeans and a t-shirt became, you know, cool. Mexico never really went that route. You know, there's a few guys that lean into it, but they're still all about the fancy gear and the presentation. I think there's a lot more Broadway involved in Mexican wrestling than there is in the United States. And I think that's kind of why it appeals. My dad, for example, he's been a wrestling fan. You know, the reason my brother and I are in this, he's been going to wrestling shows since 1960. And he loves old school, you know, black tights, black boots wrestling. He hated the cruiserweights in WCW, but he loved the luchadors. And it's funny to me because they were such a very similar style. But, you know, it's that pageantry. It's that little extra, that little artistry and the, you know, the presentation of being larger than life. And I think that's something that, you know, really can appeal to the women fans beyond your average wrestling.
You know, one of the things, whenever I go to Mexico, I'm not great at Spanish. I'm not very confident, but I can speak it. And, you know, get a couple of beers of me that I'm totally fluent.
Exactly.
I'm Ludwig Kaiser. But, you know, when I talk to taxi cab drivers, they talk about Mil Máscaras, Blue Demon, El Santo, whomever. So I'll always kind of weave it into certain talks. Like people in Mexico with shops, they'll see me with a lucha shirt on, and if they can name the luchador, I'm good. If they say Nacho Libre, I'm like, I keep on walking. But I've always been worried because the past few years, you'll ask him about lucha and they'll name John Cena and things. And that's, you know, the advent of satellite TV. And my hope is, with the success of CMLL, and maybe if WWE keeps a certain amount of authenticity in AAA, that, you know, these traditions will continue and not die out because of larger multimedia companies.
Right. And I think a lot of times you look at it like WWE has a huge fan base here, but a lot of it is vastly different than lucha fans. It's almost like, you know, liking different sports. It's NBA fans versus NHL fans. And I think that, you know, what this merger is going to do is kind of, I think probably more sway more of the lucha fans towards that, you know, WWE side of things. The thing is, you know, there's areas here in Mexico City called Polanco and Santa Fe that are just, you know, they're a different style of life. They're the high class regions where these people, you know, don't even know what poor looks like. But I think these are the people that love WWE now, and these are the consumer that WWE is after. I think now they're going to have access to, you know, their own, what they consider Mexican Lucha Libre. But I don't see WWE appealing to a local Lucha fan base. Different audience. I think this rich wrestling fan is now seeing Mexican Lucha Libre for the first time. And maybe they're more apt. If anything, it might help CMLL a little bit too. You know, WWE fans that never watched Mexican Lucha might say, wow, these guys are pretty good. Let's check out Arena Mexico. But I don't think anybody that's already a Lucha fan is going to now start watching WWE because they've already been there. They've already had it accessible to themselves.
Right now, CMLL is trying to go on a advertising kick, you know, talking about their 100% Mexican and kind of implying about, you know, WWE, an American company, that kind of thing. Is that something you think Mexican fans care about? That, AAA has been bought by WWE, an American company. Is that bad?
Absolutely. It's It's bad in certain capacities. I don't think WWE has a thing to worry about because WWE is going to make money anywhere, always, regardless. I think the name AAA might not have as much value as it once did to American fans. I think, or to Mexican fans, I think a lot of people could see it as selling out. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for CMLL right now. And I think as long as they can keep their goggles on, you know, I think it's the opportunity is endless for them, because now the last 5 years, the upswing has been incredible, you know, and sadly, I was there right before the new management kicked in, and, you know, I was there I saw the way it was, and it was a great product, but they didn't have that, the, you know, oversight to see what they, you know, the potential. Right now, it seems like they have all the futures ahead of them, and there's so many markets and so much, so many fans that could end up tuning into Lucha Libre for the first time. The good thing is, you know, they've always maintained the traditional Lucha Libre sense. Their product has always remained so essentially different than AAA that it is a true alternative. And I think now, you know, as long as they can manage it correctly, I think they, you know, the world is theirs down here. And I think a lot of sponsors that want to get into wrestling, the fact that there's a Mexican brand and a global brand, I think, you know, the fact that they're Mexican-owned, Mexican-operated is only going to help them in the long run.
Is there anything you'd think, just from an outside perspective, WWE should not do or try to avoid in Mexico?
Not necessarily avoid. I just think it's such a complicated infrastructure that has so many more levels than anybody there has any idea. It feels like there's so, I mean, you're talking these cities and streets, bill posters are still essential. You have the cars with the PA systems driving through the streets saying Lucha Libre Esta Noche. You know, there's still an infrastructure in place that is responsible for the success of Lucha Libre that is otherwise foreign to a wrestling company that isn't already doing business here. So, I obviously they're going to be fine with whatever they do, but to figure out how to really sink their teeth into Mexico and be able to have a full-time schedule here and to have more events and to be able to really capitalize on the market, you know, from within, it's going to be very difficult because it's the culture is so vastly different than a lot of people realize. It's not as simple as Americans, you know, doing everything online. You know, you can be a multimillionaire entrepreneur by knowing how to manage your social media correctly in the United States. That doesn't work here.
You wrestled last night?
So it's kind of, you know, surprising to a lot of people that I'm not under contract with WWE. It's like, you can still take bookings? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I've never been signed to AAA, so I've been kind of, you know, left out, if you will. But it's been good for me. You know, last night there was about 2,000 people. Psycho Clown was on that one. But again, I think if anything, it's probably going to give me more notoriety and more work just being seen, because that's something that's going to be hard. I've been thinking about this recently. I don't know how they plan on giving these guys a full schedule as WWE AAA talents. They're not allowed to accept outside bookings, and that's great. These guys are happy to have a guaranteed contract and just, you know, get paid whether they work or not.
Isn't Psycho Clown under contract?
From what I understand, tomorrow is the finalization of the sale.
Interesting. And to clarify, Sam's talking about August 1st. We recorded this on Thursday, July 31st. Sam Adonis, thank you so much. Stand by, Wrestling Observer Live.